At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, recognizing the value of financial advice since 1937. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
5 days of no flying is about enough for the Europeans. Planes are going to start taking off tomorrow morning. We'll see if that is soon enough to avoid a big glitch in the global supply chain. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Citrix, offering Go to My PC, allowing users to work from anywhere via the web. More at gotomypc.com/market. And by CSX, working to reduce traffic and pollution while moving 1 million tons of freight daily. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Great to have you here on this Monday, everybody. It's the 19th of April today. Air travel in Europe is slowly beginning to pick back up again, very slowly. There will be some commercial flights across the continent tomorrow. Nothing remotely near normal, probably for a couple of days, though. On this side of the Atlantic, meteorologists say the ash cloud has brushed parts of the Canadian coast, and the havoc in Europe is starting to have an economic impact in the States. Pretty much nothing has moved into or out of European airports for 5 days now. That's not just people. It's goods, too. Everything from cut flowers to car parts. Companies are reporting inventory levels falling to dangerously low levels as their supplies sit in European airports. And there is a sharp slowdown in American exports headed the other way, too, as Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
A number of European companies said today they were scrambling to get materials to their U.S. facilities, including Siemens, the big German engineering company, and BMW. Howard Archer is an economist with IHS Global Insight. He says many manufacturers keep their inventories low for efficiency's sake. Now that's causing problems.
Companies that do engage in just-in-time production will be the most vulnerable, I mean, both in terms of, you know, getting inputs and, of course, for example, if they need any spare parts of the machinery.
Getting finished goods to Europe is proving just as problematic. David Eichert's 200-employee company in Olney, Texas, makes specialty aircraft.
We have a couple of planes en route to Spain that are forestry firebombing planes, and they are stuck in St. John's Bay, Canada.
Eichert's company, Air Tractor, has already been paid for the planes sitting on the Canadian tarmac.
Now, that same buyer has another 4 airplanes that are to go fairly soon. You know, those sales can't be completed until we get clearance to ferry them home.
The next step is to look for alternatives to air freight, says Howard Archer.
You know, you're only going to switch from exporting and importing by plane to boat if you really think this is going to go on for some time.
One U.S. business that's feeling the impact isn't complaining one bit, though. Cisco Systems says that with so many business people unable to travel, it's seeing a big increase in its video conferencing business. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
In Washington, D.C., the through line is financial reform. The Senate is expected to vote on its bill later this week, but there is still plenty of negotiating time before we get to the final yays and nays. There's wrangling over a consumer protection agency and whether or not to have banks pay for a fund that will help failing banks fail. So we asked Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer to give us the latest.
Senate Banking Committee Chairman Chris Dodd has spent months shepherding the bill. It's been a lot like herding cats.
It's time now to act.
Dodd is in final negotiations with the top Republican on his committee, Richard Shelby of Alabama. They're tussling over whether a consumer protection agency will be independent or part of the Federal Reserve. Senator Shelby wanted the agency in the Fed, but now is reportedly ready to compromise. Harvard Corporate Management Professor F.M. Scherer says that's no surprise.
Certainly, the recent events with Goldman Sachs make it more likely that something will be done.
The government sued Goldman last week, saying it misled investors about derivatives, complex investments that contributed to the financial crisis. The overhaul would require trading them on open exchanges for the first time and could force some banks to get out of the derivatives market. Banks are lobbying furiously against that. They also don't like the idea of contributing billions into a fund to dismantle failing financial institutions. Scott Talbot is a senior lobbyist with the Financial Services Roundtable.
Pulling $50 billion out of lending institutions now will slow the recovery and reduce their ability to lend.
Robert Weissman expects all this to play out on the Senate floor. Weissman is president of the consumer group Public Citizen.
It's a good thing if they spend time hashing out arguments about, for example, whether we want strong control over the casino economy.
Watch for lawmakers to bring up lots of amendments during the Senate debate. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Here's a new twist in the world of product placement. Most of the time, it's a movie or a TV character, say, opening up a laptop with a clean shot of the Apple logo right there on it. The twist today is product placement during the ads, where the product is the programming. CNN has been trying it out with one of its new shows. The camera keeps on rolling right through the commercial breaks. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith reports.
On CNN's new evening news show, John King USA, the show never leaves the screen, even during commercials. Instead, footage of all the paper shuffling and scrambling around that happens during breaks runs in a little window at the bottom of the screen. Other shows are doing it, too.
Sort of the opposite of show content is guys getting made up and having their hair combed to the extent they have hair on our show.
That's Eric Rideholm, executive producer of Pardon the Interruption on ESPN. About a year ago, the show started airing 10-second snippets of behind-the-scenes footage during blocks of ads. Rideholm says viewers and stations thought it was a mistake at first, but now people love it.
People are so much more media savvy than they used to be. I mean, there's almost nothing that they don't know, so we just wanted to let them a little bit more in on everything.
And keep them in their seats, says Bill Carroll with Katz Television Group. It sells spot advertising.
If you're fast-forwarding on TiVo and you see program content, that's going to force you to check that out.
Carroll says viewers, especially younger viewers, like all that off-camera footage.
A sense of energy, a sense of immediacy, and a sense of being on the inside.
So Carroll says weaving that content into commercial breaks could be a great way to combat ad skipping. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, traders seem to have brushed off Friday's news about Goldman Sachs. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. There are hundreds of college and university programs out there teaching people how to be teachers. Some of those programs do a fine job, others don't. So New York State is set to decide tomorrow on a different way, letting alternative groups like Teach for America create their own master's programs. From the Marketplace Education Desk, Amy Scott reports.
New York is one of just a handful of states that require teachers to have a master's degree before they can be fully certified. Timothy Daly with the New Teachers Project says that's created a monopoly for teachers' colleges. Tomorrow, the New York State Board of Regents may vote to chip away at that monopoly by allowing alternative groups like Daly's to offer master's programs.
The right to be the exclusive grantors of master's degrees in a state that requires master's degrees, that was a very lucrative right that they are proposing to take away.
But Daly says the New York proposal isn't the answer. He says it would force any new program to act a lot like the old ones, with heavy coursework and PhD requirements for faculty.
It's a step in the right direction in terms of making more things possible, but it's not really alternative.
Teach for America sends recent college graduates for two-year teaching stints in some of the country's toughest schools. The group says it may start a master's program. That's got officials from traditional schools of education nervous. Mary Gresham is dean of the Graduate School of Education at the University at Buffalo, SUNY. She says teaching colleges are unfairly criticized for favoring theory over practical training.
theory certainly plays a role, but it's certainly not the sole source of the expertise that our graduates actually accumulate when they're with us.
Those graduates spend upwards of $16,000 for a two-year degree program. Alternative teacher certification can cost less than $4,000. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
So I'm making a little list here. You got rent, internet service, electricity, coffee machine, the guy who comes to water the plants, just some of the little and not so little costs of running an office. Companies don't usually spend a lot of time trimming the little things when the economy is humming right along. But when it's not, when revenues are down and expenses aren't, then every last nickel counts. And finding those nickels is a business opportunity all by itself, as Andrea Gardner explains.
At the West Coast offices of VDent, CFO Stan Bird spends a lot of time looking at bills. His company sells mostly cosmetic dental supplies, things like porcelain for veneers and dentures. Many customers pay with a credit card, and with each transaction, VDent gets charged a processing fee. Bird thought those credit card charges were too high, but he couldn't be sure.
I'm trying to understand the business of credit card processing is very complex. We didn't even know what was generating the charges. We just knew what the end result was.
When the recession kicked in, VDent's revenues began to suffer. Consumers could no longer afford pricey cosmetic dentists. The company froze salaries. Bird didn't want to think about layoffs. He hired a consulting firm called Expense Reduction Analysts. It specializes in cutting overhead costs. ERA's credit expert helped VDent add a feature to their e-commerce site. It verifies customer addresses so credit card companies know the sale is legit. That lowers risk and, in turn, VDent's processing fees. Bird soon realized that one change added up to $250,000 in annual savings.
That was a very positive day. We were extremely pleased.
Most managers don't know the tricks of the trade, so suppliers often have the upper hand in negotiations. ERA consultant Mary Lou Garcia says it's not like companies don't ask their suppliers for discounts. They just don't ask for enough.
And so there was a tendency to go and say, oh, I can do that. We've done it. No one really has the time or the resources or the knowledge, if you will, to really understand what the pricing should be.
ERA looks at everything from office supplies to insurance to utilities, but they don't suggest you cut landlines or scale back to one-ply toilet paper. Clients keep the same level of quality, they just pay less for it. ERA handles the negotiations and makes suppliers bid against one another for contracts. That usually drops overhead budgets by 15 to 20%. Garcia says that could help businesses dig out of their debt.
Today, many of the companies are still obviously reeling from the effects of the recession. I mean, it is really not uncommon to hear $1 million in terms of a gap that they're trying to fill.
Last year, revenue gaps were keeping many companies from hiring outside help, even people like Garcia who can save them money. John Firth from the Association of Management Consultants says business is picking up, but expectations are high.
I think at this point you can't really survive as a consulting company unless you show an economic benefit. I do think that this is the year, we're calling it the year of doing more with less.
Firth says while some consultants like Garcia are in demand because they shrink overhead costs, other consultants are creating broader, more strategic cost-saving plans for their clients, things like outsourcing and streamlining distribution and manufacturing. Back at VDent, CFO Stan Bird says his eyes have been opened at what's possible, and he'll bring ERA back to look at his shipping costs.
The suspicion that you have is, well, gee, I bet there's a bunch of other industries that are very complicated that I need to go look at our expenses in those areas, too, to see if there's ways to get those costs down.
He says his freight bills are as convoluted as the credit card bills were, and he expects to find more ways to save there. In Los Angeles, I'm Andrea Gardner for Marketplace.
Coming up, small grants can make a big difference in the art world.
We're really wanting to market ourselves, but we don't have a lot of money, and I think it'll be a really cool way to do our own printing of our own apparel and involve some of the youth in the area.
But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials rose 73 points today, two-thirds of 1%, closed at 11,092. The NASDAQ dipped by a point. We'll call that basically flat, 2480 at the bell. The S&P 500 added 5 points, nearly a half percent, finished at 1197. Concerns about the SEC case against Goldman Sachs had financials down this morning, but Goldman rebounded for a 1 2/3% gain today. Goldman, by the way, reports earnings tomorrow. That ought to be interesting. J.P. Morgan ended the day down 1/3 of 1%. Bank of America, B of A, shaved off 1/10 of 1%. Volcanic ash cloud over Europe put a dark cloud over airlines here stateside. United descended more than 5% today. American Airlines parent company and Continental Airlines both flew down 4 1/3% today. Southwest got some love from analysts, climbed 2 3/4%. Palm Incorporated dialed down 12% today on news that Radio Shack is going to stop carrying the Palm Pre smartphone. Radio Shack was up nearly 0.2% on that news, and you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by T. Rowe Price, understanding the connections of a complex global economy. T. Rowe Price, invest with confidence at TRoePrice.com. By Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build strong customer relationships with email marketing, online surveys, and event marketing. ConstantContact.com. And by Vanguard. Vanguarding is an investment philosophy designed to help individuals reach their financial goals. Vanguard.com. Every day, be sure to wake up to the Marketplace Morning Report. It's 8 minutes of radio you can't afford to miss. You'll hear updates on all the latest developments in business and finance as they happen.
On the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Tuesday. Space Shuttle Discovery will attempt to land in either Florida or California. Bad weather is keeping the 7 astronauts aboard in orbit today. Troubled investment bank Goldman Sachs is slated to release quarterly earnings. And it's the anniversary of the Columbine High School massacre. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. The new healthcare law is almost a month old now, just barely 30 days, which means most Americans still don't really know how it works. And they are asking the next best thing they can think of to an expert, their doctors, for help. So instead of the usual talks about cholesterol and blood pressure, some physicians are having to educate themselves on the minutiae of reform. We've called Dr. Winston Capel. He's a neurosurgeon in Jackson, Mississippi, to talk about this. Dr. Capel, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you.
What do you hear from your patients when they come in for a checkup and they start asking about health care reform?
Well, there's been an evolution from the time of the debate and passage till today. So initially, during the very short debate and the passage, emotion was high. They were outraged, and then significant anxiety over the impact on them personally and how delivery would be affected. And then secondarily, they were concerned about how it would impact us as physicians.
Do you have the answers for them?
I do my best.
Yeah.
I tell them that it's certainly a dynamic process. It's going to be challenged. It's going to be debated. And how it's going to impact us now is very difficult to tell them.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, somebody comes in for a half-hour, 40-minute consult. How much time do you think it takes away from your delivery of care?
It's averaging between 5 and 10 minutes now.
Which adds up.
It does. And it's not something that we are completely fluent in. But I try to give them some insight the best that I can.
How long do you think it's going to be before your patient can come in and maybe not have these questions or maybe just a couple that you could knock out right away and then get on to the examination?
We're seeing a little bit of decreased frequency just because they understand that the answers just aren't here. But they're still anxious. They're still certainly very concerned.
So we did some calling around trying to find doctors to talk about. And, you know, there were some who said, yes, I've had patients complain. And there are some who've said, no, you know, my patients don't really mind. What do you guys at the water cooler or in the doctor's lounge or wherever you meet your colleagues, what is your conversation between yourselves?
Well, I can tell you this. One thing that frustrates me and my colleagues, when people talk about healthcare reform, they key in on three issues: the costs, the quality, and the access. But one thing that's completely lost in the debate is physician morale. Physician morale is at an all-time low. And by data, we know through published data that 2 out of 3 physicians would leave medicine tomorrow if they could.
What about you?
I would leave tomorrow if I had an alternative career. I love the science and I love taking care of patients, but things that kill our morale are, number one, the medical malpractice threat, which looms over us every hour of every day. Number two, this intrusion into the patient-physician relationship, which we treasure. And the more layers of bureaucracy that separates us from our patients, the less gratifying it becomes.
Dr. Winston Capel, he's a neurosurgeon in Jackson, Mississippi. Dr. Capel, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs ventured into tax policy today. He said President Obama is not planning to call for a value-added tax as a way to cut the deficit. That is effectively a nationwide sales tax. We do have a whole lot of excise taxes in this country, though. Taxes on the use of something, like cigarettes or alcohol. And as of July 1st, a tax on tanning salons. It's part of the health care law. And those three, smokes, booze, and a good tan, may have another thing in common besides taxes. A new study of college students reports that about a third of those who use tanning beds might actually be addicted to tanning. From the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY, Carrie Granz has more.
Springtime is high season for tanning salons when pasty patrons get ready for summer. Then there are the regulars who go year-round, summer or winter, tan and more tan.
I have absolutely witnessed clients that are addicted to tanning.
Carrie Melkonian owns Caramel's Tanning in St. Johnsbury, Vermont.
They develop a problem where they're coming in multiple times a week, and they develop what I call to be a walking football.
But enough people think it's attractive that annual revenue for tanning beds grew fivefold in the past 2 decades. Tanning salons now bring in $5 billion per year. It's not just the look that brings in business. Catherine Mosier, a researcher at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, surveyed several hundred college students.
There is growing evidence that a significant subgroup are addicted.
Mosier says one hallmark of addiction is continuing the habit while knowing the negative consequences. Studies have found a higher risk of melanoma among people who tan before age 35. The U.S. already spends nearly $300 million treating all melanoma cases each year, a little more than projected to come in from the tax. Dan Humiston is the president of the Indoor Tanning Association.
People have addictive personalities and they're susceptible to addictions. Is this like a narcotic or cigarettes or something? That is absurd.
Perhaps the test of how addictive tanning is will be whether a $1 or $2 tax per session will keep anyone from going. In Philadelphia, I'm Carrie Grenz for Marketplace.
There was a big rally at the Georgia State Capitol building in Atlanta today. Artists protesting cuts in public funding. The Georgia House of Representatives voted last week to get rid of the state's Arts Council and the $800,000 in grants it handed out last year. Even in states that have public funding of the arts, grants are still hard to come by. So local groups have turned to small-scale private donors. Call it microgrants for starving artists. David Weinberg has the story.
Inside a 2-story brick building on a commercial street in St. Louis, about 25 people are spread out around the room, holding hot bowls of carrot leek soup, talking about which art project they plan to vote for.
Thanks, everybody, for coming to the first Sloop.
Yay. Tonight is the first night of Sloop, which is a monthly soup dinner where everyone gets a meal for just $10. They also get a packet containing proposals from various artists. At the end of the night, there'll be a vote, and the project with the most votes gets all the proceeds from the dinner.
Yeah, I don't really see it as a competitive sort of thing. It's just a fun night to get together.
Jordan Hicks was one of the artists who submitted a proposal. For his project, he collaborated with a couple of photographers and an art historian to create a set of postcards about urban decay and population decline in St. Louis. If he wins the Sloop grant, he plans to print up several sets of the cards and leave them around the city in public places. But the important thing, he says, isn't the money. It's about sharing his project with the community.
If anything, a lot of people have seen the cards that I've never met before and didn't know about the project. So, either way, it's a good night.
Artist Claire Wolf also submitted a proposal. She is the assistant director of the Urban Studio Cafe, which is a local nonprofit coffee shop.
All of the profits from coffee and food sales will fund arts programs and community programs for the neighborhood.
If Wolf wins the grant, she plans on buying a silkscreen printing machine for the cafe.
We're really wanting to market ourselves, but we don't have a lot of money, and I think it'll be a really cool way to do our own printing of our own apparel and involve some of the youth in the area.
Anne-Marie Spitz was one of the people at Sloop who told me that going to these dinners was a way for her to support the arts in a way that she hadn't been able to before.
I wouldn't consider myself a patron, really, because I don't have any money. But that was what was great about Sloop, is that I felt like I could be a patron with $10.
Both patrons and artists at Sloop talked about how much more personal this process felt compared to traditional arts funding. Normally, you donate money to an arts organization, and they decide how to spend it. At Sloop, the artists and funders actually break bread together, and each person has a say in which project gets funded. The day after Sloop, the votes were tallied, and the winner by a very narrow margin was Claire Wolf's proposal for the screen printing machine. I dropped by the Urban Studio Cafe a couple weeks after Sloop to see the screen printing in action.
The entire screen has to be wet but not dripping.
Neighborhood kids are drying silk screens with a squeegee, and it's clear that the machine is a big hit.
It actually cost $239.99, and our Sloop grant was for $240, so it was perfect.
From the time Wolf submitted her proposal to the day she purchased the screen printer, it has been less than a month.
That's a very quick turnaround.
Jeff Nilica is the co-founder of an organization in Brooklyn called FEAST, which stands for Funding Emerging Artists with Sustainable Tactics. It was one of the groups that inspired Sloop. He says for normal arts grants,
it takes a year and a half to go from writing a proposal to implementation. You know, your idea and what you're responding to could have drastically changed in that period of time.
Nilica spends a lot of his time traveling around the country helping groups set up their own monthly dinners. There are now events like Sloop in Boston, Portland, and Chicago, and the number is growing. The hope is that this model will not just change the way art is funded, but change the relationship between artists and patrons and make the art world feel less exclusive and more like a dinner party with friends. From St. Louis, I'm David Weinberg for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Citrix, offering Go to My PC, allowing users to work from anywhere via the web. More at gotomypc.com/market. By the new Harvard Business Review, a source of smart thinking for today's business world. The revival of smart begins at hbr.org. And by Putnam Investments, seeking new ways to reduce the effects of market volatility for investors. This is Putnam Today. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note today, another way to think about that financial reform bill the Senate's taking up this week. Donald Cohen, the vice chairman of the Federal Reserve, is coming out with a new research paper at the end of the week. It's about economic data, how all the signs of a financial meltdown were there, but nobody read the numbers the right way. Nobody added up 2 + 2 and got 4. Here's the kicker, though. Cohen says, and remember, this is the number two guy at the Fed, he says you can't design financial fixes in advance. You got to wait till you see the data, that is, after bad things start happening, and then you can figure out what to do about it. Debate continues all week on that Senate bill that may, or if you ask Mr. Cohen, may not fix things. Anyway, that is Marketplace from American Public Media this Monday afternoon. Today, the Dow gained 73 points, about 2/3 of 1%. The NASDAQ dropped a point. We'll call that flat. The S&P 500 rose 5 points. That's nearly 0.5%. Our producers include Caitlin Carroll, Millie Jefferson, Megan Larson, and Fiona Ng. You can tune in tomorrow to the Marketplace Morning Report for the latest in business and economic news. And coming up next time on this particular radio program, why business stays strong in Little Rock.
It's not an area where coming from another country, you really feel like you stand out. Because first of all, it's a warm, southern, genteel nature of the people here that does welcome folks.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. I hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.